And he's here to, like, make sure he's...
He makes a kind of turn to... Oh, sorry. He makes that turn to... Oh, this is... I understand the pitfalls of this. What does David Becker do?
And welcome to the Dan Brown Code. This is Lena.
And this is Forrest.
I just woke up, so we're kind of operating in like a grovelly, potentially Scarlett Johansson-esque voice space today. Just roll with it.
Man, taking another role from a woman of color. Unbelievable.
I just wanted to make a note really quickly before we get started that recently... On our Twitter account, I referred to our listeners as brownies and brownettes, and soon after, it occurred to me that it may be...
Are those Chris Brown fans?
No, I don't think so. but I think it's unnecessarily gendered to have both brownies and brownettes, so it's just going to be one. Y'all can either be brownies or you can be brownettes, and just let us know which one you'd like to be.
Brownixes.
Brownixes? Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, sound off on the Twitter machine if you want a normal name or one that ends with IX.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep your options open. This is our first time coming to you. Well, I mean, we're always come to you remotely. It's our first time coming to one another remotely.
Yeah.
It's a whole weird thing.
It was a real steep learning curve. I also can't see Forrest, which makes this a little weird.
Podcasting blind.
I know. Usually I can, like, show you notes in my book and, like, see if you're deep in thought about something. And now it's just, like, I'm just talking to my microphone. But, you know, we're professional, so we'll move through it.
Yeah. Chapter 21 of Digital Fortress. This section overall, I mean, we talk about at the end, but I think we can talk about it a little bit at the beginning. It's rough.
It's really short, and a lot of it is bad.
And, like, it's got all the prejudices you could want about, like, race, about sex work, about just, like, everything you can imagine. It's pretty
gay
wild.
People. Yeah.
There's workplace things.
It's a lot. It was a really short chapter or a short section, I thought. It went by really quickly. Yeah.
I read most of it in a Starbucks in Irvine yesterday, and then the rest when I got home at, like, midnight and was drinking blackberry ciders and...
Ooh.
Reading about, you know, David Becker's travails in Seville. Okay, let's get started with chapter 21. We're back with our friend Tokugan... I cannot say this name, and it's not a hard name.
Tokugan Numataka.
Thank you.
Since what you said last episode, I can only read it as an anime at this point.
It's written that way. Unacceptable. You said I would have them by the end of today. There is one loose end. Is Tankato dead? Yes.
At the end of this two-page chapter, it says... I'll just read you the dialogue really quick.
Mm-hmm.
They have sent a man to locate the key. His name is David Becker. This is North Dakota talking, right?
Yeah, well, theoretically.
Theoretically. And then he says, how do you know this? And then the voice says, that is irrelevant. And Numataka says, and if Mr. Becker locates the key, and then... my men will take it from him. And after that, you needn't be concerned, the American said coldly. When Mr. Becken finds the key, he will be properly rewarded. There's like a pronoun agreement issue here. I guess what it is meant to mean is that Mr. Becker will be murdered after he finds the key. But the use of he there, I don't know, was confusing. And, it's a pronoun agreement issue. And I think... we could have used like a my man will reward him properly or something. But
wait, no. When Mr. Becker finds the key, he will be properly rewarded.
Yeah, but
Mr. Becker is the clear antecedent of that he. To my mind,
I guess I have low expectations for Dan Brown.
I mean, so do I, and I understand that there is some ambivalence or ambiguity here.
I guess the real issue is the use of he will be properly rewarded as, like, a murder threat. I think that's the problem. Like, I don't like that turn of phrase.
Oh, you don't watch enough bad TV shows.
I really don't. I just started Jack Ryan, though.
Oh, God, that one is rough.
I'm having a great time with it.
why is Suleiman in Yemen if he's, like, bouncing back and forth between Yemen and Syria? And I don't get it.
I think it's, like, easy to have a base in Yemen because Yemen is destabilized, so it's not likely anyone's going to, like, run up on your terrorist operation.
Yeah, but, like, I mean, my understanding of most of the militants in Yemen is they aren't of the, you know, ISIS, like...
That's right.
...way traditional Sunni death cult kind. They're on a different tip. And I know Suleiman is the non-sectarian terrorist, but I don't know, dude.
Well, Suleiman he's different than all the other terrorists, okay? Yeah, he's got a different M.O.
Sunni Shia, he appeals to everybody. Thank you, Jim. That's helpful.
Jim. His boss's name is Jim in this one. And it's so
His boss
so
is Bunk from The Wire.
I know. I love the show. He's so buff. He's, like, so massive for no reason.
I hate it. And, like, he doesn't display any emotions. Like, the only way you know what's going on with Jack Ryan is when other people are telling you what's going on with Jack Ryan. Like, Jack Ryan's such a good man. And you're like, nah, not really. And then, like,
I would say it's like the Dan Brown novel of Amazon Originals.
I mean, it's like the Tom Clancy novel of Amazon Originals.
Yeah, it really, fair.
Tom Clancy writes that way.
He's such a Mary Sue, though. He's just walking around like, oh, I'm just me.
It is wild.
Everyone watch Jack Ryan. We can talk about Chapter 22.
Chapter 22. Okay, we're back with David Becker in the hospital where he's harassing the old Canadian man. But he's not so just Canadian. Late. He's French Canadian.
Here's a fun little sentence. He's a French Canadian, yeah. Although Becker's French was perfect, he spoke in what he hoped would be the man's weaker language, English. Convincing a total stranger to hand over a gold ring might be a little tricky. Becker figured he could use any edge he could get. Excuse me? What kind of sense does that make? I'm screaming.
He keeps on, like, doing psychology to people with his languages, and it never works
spy.
For him.
He's a, quote, linguist, works. Unquote. I just, so you're hoping to do, like, very complicated, like, persuasion. So you're like, let me make sure he only understands half of what I'm saying. Because that's how you persuade people.
David Becker is just, like, a pickup artist, I think.
You know, Oh, no.
When we read these 20 chapters with this in mind, it will become clear to you that I'm right.
Oh, I already know you're right. Oh, no.
At every turn in this section, he's like, well, this guy speaks French and English. So the way I can get him to do what I want is to do the thing that will confuse him. So I'll start by calling him like, oh, you know, that dress makes you look less fat. And then he'll come over to me. And it's just bad.
Are you the one who said that linguists, like, typically don't learn many languages? Like, they usually just study the science of language.
That's my understanding. Like, a lot of linguists that I've heard talking, like, aren't people who speak a bunch of languages. They just know a lot about languages.
So what the fuck? What's Becker doing?
Well, David Becker is Dan Brown's understanding of what a linguist is, which is someone who knows a lot of languages.
It's also Dan Brown's understanding of who Dan Brown is, so.
In a big way. So the French Canadian man who, as we may recall, was like trying to help the dying and say Tancado, and then he got picked up by the police and then stuck in the back of a motorcycle and fell off and was dumped in the hospital and seems to be kind of angry about it. But he's also a travel writer for the Montreal Times.
Yeah, he's like a big deal restaurant reviewer, it feels like, right?
I think just like a destination travel writer. Oh, there is a Montreal Times. 9,100 likes on Facebook.
Hey, okay. We're trying to get our little Twitter up to those numbers. So
yeah,
I don't know even where to begin with this chapter. So.
I mean, it's just this whole thing where at first this French guy, his name is Clouchard, Inspector Clouseau. He thinks that David Becker is someone that the Seville Tourism Agency has sent to bribe him to not write, like, that Seville's a shithole where cops will drop you off the back of motorcycles. And he's not having any of it. He's very honest because, you know,
that's what his subscribers demand of him, is that he is honest.
He's been bribed before.
You're not the first. They tried the same thing at the Moulin Rouge, Brown's Palace, and the Golfinho in Lagos. But what went to press? The truth. The worst Wellington I've ever eaten. The filthiest tub I've ever seen. And the rockiest beach I've ever walked. My readers expect no less.
That's my French-Canadian accent. You can tell it's been carefully studied.
No, you've actually done a lot of work since the last time, since we read Da Vinci Code.
Yeah.
So Becker is saying he's from the Canadian consulate. So he's posing as someone from the Canadian consulate, making sure he's okay. And it's like a diplomatic courtesy because he's, such a fancy and valued member of you know, the Canadian society. And we have to make sure that he's, like, the effect of this is mitigated because we have to, like, save him from the, quote, indignity suffered in these, or shall we say, less refined countries, such as Spain. Dan Brown left Exeter, New England, and went somewhere where there was sun and spices and was like, my God, the third world.
That sounds accurate.
And that's what we're getting. We're getting Dan Brown's impression of Seville as like a small-minded, like sheltered college. Where did he go to college? Do we know?
I looked up one time because I was sure it had to have been Harvard, and then it wasn't Harvard, and I got like all upset about it. Amherst College.
Oh, Amherst.
Oh, it's a private liberal arts college located in Amherst, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
As you may know, it was founded in 1821 as an attempt to relocate Williams College by its president, Zephania Swift Moore. These are just things I know off the top of my head about Amherst College.
You're really getting away with a lot.
Yeah, its motto in English is "Let them enlighten the lands," which is what Dan Brown has always done.
Let them enlighten the lands?
Let them enlighten the lands. That bodes ill, honestly.
Okay, I mean, the University of California motto is "Let there be light."
Yeah, but I mean,
which is the same thing, but better.
Well, that's just cribbed from the Vulgate. That's fiat yeah. lux.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably a crib from the Hebrew too, but I don't know the Hebrew, so what can I do?
Anyway, Clouchard is the meanest Canadian I've ever encountered.
Yeah, he's never sorry.
He's not sorry even once. If anything, I guess once you're French, you're no longer Canadian in Brown's head.
I mean, I don't think French Canadians have the same connotations for politeness.
I guess I don't know.
I mean, my main exposure to it is through the wheelchair assassins and Infinite Jest, so my views are a little skewed.
Oh, have you read Infinite Jest?
Lena, I've read Infinite Jest twice.
Why did you do it twice?
Okay. I understand that it's insufferable, but also it's really good.
I mean, I'm sure it is.
But yeah.
Wheelchair assassins. They're French Canadian?
Yeah, they're a extremist Quebecois separatist group in you see, in Infinite Jest, there's not the United States and Canada anymore. The U.S., Mexico, and Canada are all one united country called ONAN, the Organization of North American Nations, and the Quebecois want nothing to
NAFTA.
Do with it.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, but with a funny name about masturbation. You see, it's a funny book. But it's got serious stuff in there, too, about addiction and depression and drug... I already said addiction, but Boston... It's a good
book.
You
say Boston?
Yeah, it takes place in Boston, most of it.
Oh, man. Do you think Dan Brown's read Infinite Jest?
No. Dan Brown looked at it and got frightened. He didn't read it for the good reasons that people don't read it. He read it for the bad reasons people don't read it.
Oh, that it's just long and time-consuming?
Exactly.
Becker wants to know what's going on.
Yeah.
He basically is taking essentially what would be a police report, but he's a consulate worker, so a consulate mm-hmm. report.
This chapter is so long.
It is so long for no reason, and I think it's because there's a bunch of dialogue that's just like two words.
Yeah.
And so he asks where the ring is, and he doesn't have the ring, and he says that he gave it to a German, a big fat German. Who was out with an escort. And Becker's like, you mean a prostitute? And Clouchard is like, no, I mean an escort, Becker. and they're not criminals, and it's absurd that, like, sex workers are harassed like common thieves. And I was like, progressive, Clouchard, like, what's going on? And so Becker's, like, in shock that an escort would have her hands on this ring.
I think the other key thing here is that Becker asks if Clouchard was the one who administered CPR to Tenkato, and he says that nobody administered CPR.
Yeah, that's important. Also, that Clouchard should have been the one to die because he was very fat.
Maybe the German guy should have been the one to die. Clouchard is not German. He's French. Canadian.
Oh, so yeah. Clouchard says the German should have been the one to die because the German was fat. That is
why. Is this the last time you think we're going to hear the German guy's weight?
Oh,
I think probably.
Oh, boy.
We also learn that right before a nurse comes and says, like, yo, what the fuck are you harassing this, like, clearly ailing man for? Becker has managed to get him to tell him the name of the escort, and it seems to be Dewdrop, and Becker is confused by that name.
Dewdrop is Clouchard's rosebud, you know. Like, this is his Kane moment.
Yeah.
Man,
when we get the explanation for this, it's going to make me very angry.
Yeah, likewise. This book is like stupid Guess Who, kind of. This book is stupid. Okay, it's, 23.
Yeah, we're back in Node 3 at the NSA, and Susan has a lemon mist herb tea because she's a lady.
So she's chilling, and she's like thinking, and her thoughts are jarred by a Chad coming in through the door. His name is Greg Hale. He was tall and muscular with thick blonde hair and a deep cleft chin. He was loud, thick-fleshed, and perpetually overdressed. Have you
this
seen that,
the
like...
the second time a person in this novel has been described as thick-fleshed.
What does it mean?
I don't know.
It's, like, reprehensible, but also, like, dizzyingly incoherent, you know? Like, what?
Well, because, like, it doesn't sound hot, but, like, Greg Hale's clearly supposed to be, like, hot, right?
He's, like... Like I said, have you seen that, like, meme?
Yeah, he's the Chad, not the virgin.
Right. His fellow cryptographers had nicknamed him Halite after the mineral. Hale had always assumed it to be some rare gem, paralleling his unrivaled intellect and rock-hard physique. Had his ego permitted him to consult an encyclopedia, he would have discovered it was nothing more than the salty residue left behind when oceans dried up. Burn. He's salt.
So, here's the thing about that nickname. A, from Hale to Halite, it's like not a, it doesn't come to mind immediately as your go-to nickname for Greg Hale, but then also, like, which of these cryptographers who hates Greg Hale is also like a geology nerd who's like, ah yes, Greg Hale, you're just salt that's crystallized into a mineral form, that's why I'm going to call you Halite. It's a weird nickname to somebody. It's just an excuse for Dan Brown to do this thing
I really kind of just took it at face value. And what do you want me to say? It's fucking stupid.
It's just a dumb nickname. But we're not done making fun of Greg Hale because...
I have a lot of conflicting feelings about Greg Hale. Like I think if I had just, like, met him out, I would probably take him home, you know? Like,
with the exception of, like, his primary character trait we get in this section, I kind of like him.
Yeah, same. Wait, what do you think is the primary character trait that we get in this section?
Being a sexual harasser.
Okay, yes. I had a more pressing issue, actually, okay. With him.
We'll Which get one's to that?
It. No, we'll get to it.
Okay. So he's got a White Lotus as his car, and its license plate is that classic 8-letter license plate that says Megabyte.
Characters for a license plate.
Anyways, as a childhood, he was a petty criminal until he joined Marines, and then he killed someone in the Marines.
With Taekwondo.
With Taekwondo. Hale accidentally killed a fellow Marine in a drunken brawl. The Korean art of self-defense, Taekwondo, proved more deadly than defensive.
Not everyone I know, but like a good fifth of everyone I know has like an advanced belt in Taekwondo. Like, but it's like, not that deep.
Everyone I know who did Taekwondo did it when they were like 8. Like, it's...
So when did he learn Taekwondo? In the Marines?
I don't know when he learned it, but it probably wasn't when he was a child, because he was a petty criminal. They're not doing Taekwondo. Although, I guess, I think one of the guys in the raid's a Taekwondo guy, and he really kicks ass with it. So it can be deadly. I've seen people go into town with that Taekwondo.
I don't know. I mean, the rival team in Karate Kid were all petty criminals, basically. So.
I've never seen the Karate Child.
The martial arts child.
Yeah.
So his computer expertise grew after all of that. He's like a computer whiz.
He was one of the new breed of cyber freaks with email friends in every nation.
So Susan is like, what are you? Oh no, he's like, what are you doing here? And she's like, it's Saturday. I could ask you the same question. And he's like, just wanted to retweak a few lines. Those are drugs. And check my email, because you have to go into the office to check your email.
Secure NSA email address.
I mean, it's still a workplace, Forrest.
I don't know.
There's a lot of it's. So he does sexually harass Susan, which is risky considering you get fired for that shit here.
Yeah, we have a whole chapter explaining how, like, nobody sexually harasses Susan because you get fired immediately if you do so. And then we learn that all Greg does in this office all day is harass Susan. Every day. He always does it.
Well, the thing is, it turns Susan's stomach, but also she was too proud to complain to Strathmore about Hale.
Yeah, but, like, people gotta notice it.
Yeah, I mean, he seems like a loud asshole. Like, surely
his
someone
can
tell. His
favorite line... It's something about interfacing to check the compatibility of their hardware, which is terrible. I hate it.
I have a lot of questions. Like, okay, so genitals, like, what would make them incompatible? Like, well, if he had, like a boxing glove instead of a dick, would that be the thing that precludes them? I don't know. Like, there's just... there's not a lot of, like... excluding factors. I don't know. He pulls over the lattice doors of the pantry like a bull.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up next.
Sorry.
How would a bull open the pantry doors?
I don't know. He would headbutt through them.
But then what does he... This, like, super aggressive, like, ultra-masculine asshole guy, what is he eating out of that refrigerator?
Tofu. He's a soy boy.
Oh, Jesus.
But I think at the time, like in the mid-90s, like tofu was like a health food.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on here. It has certainly changed since then. Then he grabbed a quart of virgin olive oil and took a few swigs. Honestly, a man after my own heart.
Oh, no. I've written capital N-O over that whole thing. You cannot be taking swigs of olive oil in front of me, you freak.
It cleans out his lower intestine.
No,
when he wasn't pushing carrot juice
not.
On the rest of the staff, he was preaching about the virtues of high colonics. I don't know about colonics.
No good. I hate it.
I don't like any of it. The thing about colonics is people will try to talk to you about them, and I'm like, I don't want to talk about how you put water up your butt.
That's nobody's ever spoken to me about this.
I'm really happy for you, but I put out
a real air of not wanting to hear about your health bullshit. That's one of my things as a person.
You just seem uninterested in all of that.
I mean, people know I'm going to tell them it's hokum.
What?
Balderdash. People know I'm going to tell them it's hokum.
Hokum. Balderdash.
Snake oil.
Flim flam.
Flim flam.
he's an ass. He's like a Chad. He's a Chad to the max. Susan has a lot of disdain for him because he doesn't seem like NSA material. Because
he did kill a guy.
He did kill a guy. He has a military background. Although I guess Commander Strathmore also does.
I don't know if killing a guy in the drunken brawl is the military. I mean, like, I'm sure it happens sometimes, but, like, it's not the primary kind of killing the military is known for.
Yeah. I mean, no. That's not what I mean. I mean, he killed a guy, and also separately, another reason for him not to be NSA material is that he has a military background, although Strathmore also does. Let's see.
How was he brought into the NSA?
Congress wanted a super algorithm for encryption, and NSA was like, well, we can't do that because we have to decrypt everything. So they wrote a very complicated algorithm that basically had a password.
But at that point, Greg Hale was working in the private sector and was like, hey, this is password. You can just enter and read all the emails. And then the NSA is like, fuck, shit.
And they're like, fuck you. The EFF descended on the scandal like vultures. Those depraved fucking...
This is called Skipjack. This is the Skipjack fiasco.
I love the word fiasco. I love it.
It's a good word. We're going to come back to Skipjack a little later, and it's going to be wild what side Dan Brown wants us to be on.
I know, because I know Strathmore is like an authoritarian, but
yeah,
Susan
he argued
also...
that the public's craving for privacy would come back to haunt them. He insisted the public needed someone to watch over them. The public needed the NSA to break codes in order to keep the peace. Which, like, this is kind of prescient for the Patriot Act.
24. So, let's see. He knows that he has to find this escort, so he calls the two escort services. Oh, sorry, Becker.
Thank you.
Yeah, so he calls the two escort services and tries his best to come off as a cop, I guess.
It's so bad. First, he spends a while thinking about Dewdrop's such a weird name. It sounded more like a cow than a beautiful girl. Not a good Catholic name at all. Clouchard must have been mistaken. And then he just is the worst at intelligence again.
So he uses broken English so that he can sound like he's a German looking for his brother. So he is like, I'm looking for a redheaded escort because that's who my brother was with. And they were like, sorry, we don't have a redhead. And so he calls the other one. This is where he comes off as a cop really bad. Let's see. He's talking about how his brother Klaus is married, but he's very fat. His wife no lie with him. And he's also fat and lonely and wants to lie with the same girl. And I don't know about all of that, you know? Forrest, you're a man.
What's up?
This may be a question that's... Would you, if your brother had like an especially attractive... escort, would you also hire the same escort, or is there a boundary there?
No, but I'm not some German freak like this guy.
A cyber freak.
I don't know what they're up to.
Just a regular freak.
I've seen some motion pictures of that country, and they're up to no good over there. I'll tell you that much.
We can talk about that later, but I don't know what's going on in the German psyche that's where it's all happening. Why Germany?
Mein Bruder.
So he's like, that's my brother Klaus Schmidt. I'm Sigmund Schmidt. Where'd you get our number? The yellow pages. He messed up by saying he wanted to lie with her. And they were like, oh, we don't offer sex services. We offer escorts for dinners and luncheons.
Yeah.
What we do is legal.
Nobody has ever more clearly been a cop on the telephone.
I know.
Than
he's
Becker.
Like, I'd like to have sex with a lady. So they only have two redheads. They only have two.
Whoa,
sorry,
there.
Redheads, Immaculata and Rocio. Neither would allow a man to sleep with them for money. That is called prostitution, and it is illegal in Spain. Good night, sir. and now he has to find he has to try again. Basically, nothing gets done here. We just learned that the two redheads are named Immaculata and Rocio. Every hot woman in these books is a redhead. And, like, Dan Brown legitimately has the most basic taste in women. Like, it's all like, she had a perfectly flat stomach and long-ass legs. And I'm like, I understand that you have the Victoria's Secret catalog in your house. I get it. I do. But, like...
Yeah, Dan Brown is a very boring person.
Find a quirk, you know? Like, get a fetish or something. Anyway.
He has some foot stuff going on.
Yeah, I don't like that. Get a better fetish.
Chapter 25, we get a Heathers-style assassination where someone's killed by putting blue antifreeze or cleaning fluid into
it's
their IV.
It's fucked up. It is messed up. Clouchard is killed by the man in the wire-rimmed glasses, which he doesn't deserve. You know, he doesn't know anything.
No, and we learned those Y-Room glasses are actually Google Glass. It was a prototype of the new Monocle computer developed by the U.S. Navy to help technicians record battery voltages in cramped quarters on submarines. What? The miniature computer packed a cellular modem and the newest advances in micro technology. Its visual monitor was a transparent liquid crystal display mounted in the left lens of a pair of eyeglasses. And he types into it with a weird glove that, like, lets him do finger motions to type. Anyways, he has typed in subject P. Clouchard M. dash. Terminated.
He's the Terminator. Wearing Google Glass.
He's some kind of assassin, and his personal touches, he always includes the name of the people he's killed as a professional courtesy.
Terminator came out in 1984. So it's just like blatantly a copy of the Terminator, right? It's not like,
I mean, he didn't wear glasses.
No, but he wore sunglasses. But he did, first of
and
all.
And he could see and when he looked he data. Saw typing. Yeah. Holy shit. Yeah, that's I hadn't thought of that. That's right, though. Good call. Good call.
Thank you. So he's being chased by the Terminator.
Yeah.
So that's really
But he's just
cool.
sitting on a... Yeah. And so now David Becker is sitting on a bench being depressed that he's bad at his job. Just for the record, we're all picturing the fat German guy as that caterpillar from A Bug's Life, right? Because I know I am.
Yeah, obviously.
Okay.
I want to be a beautiful butterfly.
God, what a good movie. I haven't watched that movie in forever. Anyways, chapter 26 is a dumb chapter because this is the one where David Becker realizes what the name Dewdrop is all about.
It's like, you know how Dan Brown would have a brain blast, but you haven't seen Jimmy Neutron, so you don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but I'm now familiar with the concept.
That's what happens. It's like he just remembers a bunch of words. The slick voice of Señor Roldán at Escortes Belén was on endless loop in his head. We only have two redheads, Immaculata and Rocio. I could have given you a little stereo sound experience there, but I didn't want to switch the settings of my microphone.
Becker stopped short. He suddenly knew. And I call myself a language specialist? I thought you called yourself a linguist.
What is he?
He couldn't believe he'd missed it. Rocio was one of the most popular girls' names in Spain. It carried all the right implications for a young Catholic girl. Purity, virginity, natural beauty. The connotations of purity all stem from the name's literal meaning. Drop of dew. So what happened is when Rocio met her German client, she translated her name to the only language they had in common, English, and told him her name was Dewdrop. You know how when you introduce yourself to people from and they don't speak the same language as you, you always translate your name into their language? You know how you do that? How you never met anyone named Peter? They all kind of say, hey, my name's Rock.
Yeah, no, I remember when I met you, I was like, hi, my name is Young Palm Tree. And you were like, greetings, Young Palm Tree. Yeah.
And I call you that to this day. The only thing I can think of where we do that is with Native American names.
Yeah, but yeah, that's true. Huh. I don't know enough about
but, like,
that.
I don't know how that works, so... who knows? But it's very weird, and it is just to make us have an extra couple chapters of David Becker having to problem solve. It's
so stupid.
Like, it's the kind of artificial barriers Dan Brown sets up in this book are even clumsier than the ones in Angels and Demons and Da Vinci Code.
They're really, I mean, obviously it's his first book, so he really doesn't understand about, like, what's the word I'm looking for?
Being good at writing.
Yes. Forest, does your name mean like a forest or no?
Probably. I've not done much looking up of the roots of forest as a name.
Okay. But you've done so much work about your last name. I figured.
Well, my grandparents did the work on the last name.
Oh, got it. Man, white people.
They compiled a big genealogy book.
quick aside. There is, I'm in law school, if y'all know, and...
Oh, yeah, how's that going?
What do you want me to say, man? It's the first semester of 1L, and it, like, fucking sucks. Like, I mean, we're getting through it, but it's a lot. But there is a judge named Judge Learned Hand.
Oh, yeah, that's, he's on the Supreme Court,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Or was he like not in the Supreme
he
Court?
Was,
it's one of those
he
two
was,
things.
No, he was in New York, as far as I know. I'm not sure if he was on the
okay.
Supreme Court. But great name. I thought he might have been Native, like a Native American, because what a dope name, you know? But no, it's just that his dad's name was, or his mom's maiden name was Learned, and his dad's last name was Hand.
Man, my man got some eyebrows on him. Have you seen this motherfucker?
I have.
Holy
but I was
shit.
Like, how progressive, like a native judge. No, not even.
No. Okay, chapter 27.
Okay.
We're back in the node 3 on crypto.
Yeah, so she's waiting for her tracer to come back. Hale hasn't looked at the run monitor. She's worried that he will, because if he does, he'll find out that Transalter has been running for 17 hours or whatever. He's absorbed in his work.
And then she gets an email notification that she thinks is her tracer coming back, but it's just Greg shooting his shot.
Well, actually, okay. Spoiler alert, but she says, North Dakota, let's see who you are. And then she gets an email from Hale. Dan Brown thinks he's very clever.
I think this might be a misdirect.
Oh, yeah?
I think it's maybe. A red herring.
I don't know anything.
But I forgot all about the... I forgot everything that happened in this section was, like, totally fresh and new to me. I remember nothing about it from my first... I think I've read this novel, like, 3 times before.
Whoa, Forrest!
I reread books a lot when I was, like, in middle school. What do you want from me?
He's asking her out for dinner, and she's like, hey. She's like, no. And he's like, they have great carpaccio, which carpaccio is so good.
I was going to say, I'm in.
I am
all
in.
All you need to tell me.
Or at least I was in until the following thought process on the part of Hale. The brilliant female cryptographer was a constant frustration to him. Hale had often fantasized about having... Oh.
1 second. Right before that, this was strike 89 with Susan Fletcher.
Oh, that's awful. I skipped that. I don't know what that's
Yeah, that's
about.
Too many.
Hale had often fantasized about having sex with her, pinning her against Transalter's curved hull and taking her right there against the warm black tile. But Susan would have nothing to do with him. In Hale's mind, what made things worse was that she was in love with some university teacher who slaved for hours on end for peanuts. It would be a pity for Susan to dilute her superior gene pool procreating with some geek, particularly when she could have Greg. We'd have perfect children. So... I was on board for Greg until we got to the eugenics.
I forgot about this part. I have a big frowny face drawn over it. So I think I blocked it out of my head.
So he's a health nut and like a Chad, but also a eugenicist with weird sexual fantasies. Like,
also
not even kinky weird, just like upsetting. Go ahead. Sorry.
How is this computer programmer guy not think he's a geek? Right,
that escapes like, me. Yeah,
he thinks that David Becker, who's yes, is a geek, but like he also is described as being like way hot and like plays squash and whatnot,
and puts his head in the water fountain.
Disgusting.
Juice fiend.
God, he loves juice so much. God damn it!
Wait, I really want to discuss something really quick. So yeah. My guess is. Dan Brown is aware that he is out of his wife's league. Or his wife is out of his league. And so this is him working out his insecurities. He's like, I bet people look at her and think, she shouldn't be with an Exeter teacher like me. But they don't know what I have to offer her. She can see more than the studliness. Oh, I imagine the love interest from The Devil Wears Prada when I think about Greg Hale. I don't know if that's appropriate. I don't know if that's correct.
Oh, yeah, that guy kind of sucks, right?
No, not her real boyfriend, but the one who works in publishing.
I haven't seen that movie in a while.
Here, let me
I don't
see
remember
if I...
that guy.
No, you gotta look it up. Come on. Okay. Simon Baker.
He looks like Warren Zevon.
Excuse me, who?
Warren, he sings Werewolves of London, but he's also a really good songwriter. He's underrated because no one ever thinks about him.
Oh, I see.
He's really good.
Well, he's The Mentalist, I guess.
Okay. Sure.
I guess I imagine The Mentalist.
He doesn't look like a Warren Zevon. He does in his black and white picture on IMDb, but not in The Mentalist cover.
The one where he has
a beard? That seems right to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
He's getting a lot of really lovely smile lines as he ages, and that makes me happy, because he must be living a happy life. Anyway, moving on. So he's messing with her, basically, and she's like, leave me alone, and he's like, are you trying to get rid of me? And it's like, yeah, obviously, like, fuck off forever, please.
I mean, he comes over to look at her screen, and she, like, pushes him away, or, like, sticks a finger to his chest to stop him or something, and it's the first time she's ever touched him. He's like, whoa, she's serious, but I'm very intrigued as to what Susan could be working on over there.
Against his rock-hard chest. Sure as hell isn't just a
diagnostic. Mm.
I think Dan Brown is into Greg Hale, but also resents him for being everything
he's
not. It
wasn't quite what Hale had in mind for their first contact, but it was a start.
I just have frowny faces all over this page. Oh, this whole chapter is so long and stupid and gross and stupid and eugenics and bad.
So now we're on to chapter 28, which is definitely going to be good because it takes place in the escort service. And so nothing could go wrong here.
So he calls he's not speaking broken English with a German accent now. Now he's speaking lightning fast Spanish from the north of Spain. He's like, this is a hotel. And he's like, no. This is an escort service. And he's like, well, I found this number in a passport. Basically, the guy is like, are you looking for an escort? And he's like, no. And the escort service guy is like, okay, but like, are you looking for an escort? And he's like, no, I just want to return this passport to the person. Can I leave it with you? Or do you know where this person is? Or I'll just leave it at the police office. You know, you don't have to worry about that. I'll take it to the police station. And the escort guy's like, no, don't go to the police. Here's the name of the, where they're staying. Alfonso 13, right? And that's it. So now he's off to the races. He knows where the fat German is with the girl.
Yeah, that wasn't so hard. Cool. Chapter 29.
Yeah, he doesn't use his new knowledge of Rocio's name here. He just
that's why he called back to ask about where they were, right? Like he wouldn't have known that was the place unless he realized that Rocio had to have been Dewdrop. We're back in the NSA. We reestablished there's an unbreakable algorithm. It's very important. Digital Fortress is an unbreakable algorithm that Translator can't hack. And then Susan starts thinking about how David is like Strathmore and her fiance is like her work dad. And then we get all this gross shit. Susan relied on Strathmore too. He was her shelter in a world of power hungry men, nurturing her career, protecting her, and as he often joked, making all her dreams come true. There is some truth to that, she thought. Blah, 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 blah. And then we learn that there's this running thing between Susan and David Becker where he ends all of her notes to her with the quote-unquote code without wax. Starts off because all their communication is Susan's trying to mold David into a cryptographer is, you know, in some kind of cipher. And then David sends one that says, please accept this humble fax. My love for you is without wax. As a way to end a fight, and Susan cannot figure it out, and he won't tell her because she's got to figure it out. All she's figured out is an anagram to taxi hut. Wow. So, you know, there's that. And then Strathmore comes into the office and sees Hale there.
I'm sorry,
he's like, what the fuck?
I want to pause on without wax. Do you have any theories about without wax?
I mean, I know what it means.
Oh, you do? Okay, I don't.
Yeah, do you?
I didn't think about it because I'm sure no matter what it is, it's not worth the payoff.
It is not. I can promise you that. So yeah, Strathmore comes in, is like, what the fuck is Hale doing here? Susan, come and talk to me outside. So Susan puts on like a password to her computer screen lock thing. And then she slips on her shoes and follows the commander out because, lest we forget, she has been barefoot this whole time. So Susan and Strathmore are having this conversation outside and nothing really happens in it. And then Greg Hale has been running this whole thing where he swaps his keyboard with everybody else in the morning and he's installed like a key tracker, whatever the hell you call those things, and his keyboard. Keystroke recorder thing. And so that way he knows everyone's 5-digit privacy codes for their screen lock program. And he sees that Susan has sent out a tracer of some kind, and maybe because he has motives, or maybe just a general impish wanting to keep Susan around the office longer, he stops the tracer from running and then covers his tracks and then locks her monitor just as she comes back into the room. And that's chapter 29.
We do get a thing about why can't we call him? Why can't we call David? And Strathmore says, I don't want to talk on unsecured lines. So that's... Okay, so he manually aborts the tracer, and now we go on to chapter 30th. Chapter 30, which has easily the best line Dan Brown has ever written in his life and will ever write. This whole book has been worth it for this. Okay.
Oh, I don't know what line you're talking about. I'm excited.
Well, we'll get into it. What happens here?
Well, first, David Becker walks into the hotel and is greeted by the concierge, who is very subtly coded as maybe a gay man. En que puedo servirle, señor? How may I serve you? He spoke with an affected lisp and ran his eyes up and down Becker's body. Isn't Spanish in Spain supposed to have a lisp?
Yeah,
isn't that like part of the thing?
He's not gay, he's just European.
It would just be, eyes up and down David Becker's body.
He's European, maybe he's sizing up his suit, you don't know.
Yeah. But he also appreciates Rocío. Ah, Rocío, a beautiful creature. And so David's trying to, you know, get around and
so he's talk like, are they at dinner? And he's like, no, they're fucking. And he's like, could I go up to where they're fucking, please? And he's like, no, sorry, you can't. And so...
Well, but Becker had no intention of waiting 10 hours for a fat man and a prostitute to wander down for breakfast.
Dan Brown! Who do you think reads your books? Do you think they're all, like, slender and willowy with perfect breasts and flat stomachs? I bet you hope they are. Because Dan Brown is such a prize. Anyway.
David Becker pulls, like, the classic spy movie move of asking if he can't learn what room she's in, if he can leave a note for her that the concierge will bring, puts it in the mailbox for their room. Okay.
Before then, we get the best line that I've gotten from Dan Brown, and it goes, the concierge looked down at the envelope and clucked sadly to himself. Another lovesick heterosexual. What a waste. I want to tattoo another lovesick heterosexual like on my forehead. Dan Brown.
That one is pretty good.
This is the best one.
When I was reading this section, I like underlined affected lisp and was like, you know, he's Spanish. And then I clocked the ran his eyes up and down Becker's by. I was like, maybe he's just European. And then we got to that part. I was like, oh, he was doing this. It was a gay thing.
It's a gay thing.
Thanks, Dan. The concierge puts the envelope into the box for suite 301. Yeah. And so now Becker knows where they are.
There's a bit here where the concierge hates to see Becker go, but loves to watch him leave. You know, he's watching his little white boy booty bouncing along. And Becker figures out that it's suite 301. And then he says, in and out. And now we're at a stopping point.
Yeah, I found the book.
Oh, blessings.
I found 187 Men to Avoid. Number 61, Men to Avoid, are men who consider burping on command a marketable skill.
That's fair, because the man is, quote, man, unquote, is probably 13.
And you shouldn't be dating
a 13-year-old, you know, so.
Seconded. Number 62, men with pierced anything.
Okay, boo. Come on now. It's a bad opinion. Dan Brown is obviously just boring and afraid to get a Prince Albert piercing. Just...
What's that? I honestly don't know.
Okay, so it's a piercing.
Oh, I can Google it.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Man, the first thing on Google was a kit to do it yourself, and I don't think I want to do that.
Don't do it. Definitely go to
A licensed
professional. A licensed professional who knows what they're doing. And
the picture on the Wikipedia page is honestly kind of good.
Is it? Hold on.
I scrolled past that pretty fast because I don't know if my parents are going to walk into the room. God, it's like being a child again. This is bullshit.
Yeah, it's like... It's not like an overtly, like... vulgar picture. It's just like, here's
yeah, so if you, if you're at work right now, just look it up if you know what we're talking about.
Do not do that. Don't look it up.
Your boss is gonna like it, I promise. Number 63, men with fake Rolex watches. You can just say men with fake Rolexes.
Didn't he?
Well, get ready for it. Get ready for number 64.
No, hold on.
Men with real Rolex watches.
What? This is so confusing. Because didn't Vernet have a real Rolex and then pass it off as a fake Rolex? So is he both? Is he double a man to avoid?
Yeah, correct.
Oh, man.
Number 65. Okay, men who say chow.
My dad says chow. That's not well, nice.
Gotta stay away from him.
How about Italian men? He doesn't like Italian men? I guess not.
I mean, can you blame? Number 66, and the last one for this time, men with their initials shaved into their sideburns.
Let's see if I can find any proof of this ever happening. Okay, look, this has never happened. No one has ever done this.
Chapter 31. We're back to node 3. And I don't think... Oh, this is where Susan and Greg get into an argument about the NSA, and this is where I've written Comrade Greg.
Yeah, I wrote he's hashtag woke bae, but also a eugenicist, so what is the truth?
He's a complex man. He's a man of many contradictions.
So he's talking about how he knows Tenkata personally, and like they used to exchange their email friends, they used to exchange emails, and he definitely agrees that, like, the NSA shouldn't be able to read everyone's email. Yeah, so he's like, yeah, you know, we shouldn't be reading people's email. And she's like, what do you mean?
That back door was so the NSA could decode email that threatened this nation's security.
Government should have right to gather information that threatens the common good. It's like, yeah, he's like, yeah, but, you know, warranted search versus... warrantless yeah. search. And
I mean, quote the newborn baby Susan Fletcher, we don't snoop average citizens, and you know it. The FBI can tap telephones. That doesn't mean they listen to every phone call that's ever made. And then woke Greg, if they had the manpower they would. Fucking right.
Hashtag woke Greg. And So Hale says, you know, you sound like you've been brainwashed by Strathmore. You know damn well the FBI can't listen in whenever they want. They've got to get a warrant. A spiked encryption standard would mean the NSA could listen in to anyone, anytime, anywhere.
You're right, as we should be able to.
Holy God. That really threw me for a loop. I was like, Susan.
Yeah. Susan's no good. That's Susan,
okay.
You're canceled.
Susan is fucking canceled.
And that's the T, sis.
We have to delete this episode.
I'm probably leaving that part.
You built Translator. You got your instant information source. He says, you win. And she goes, don't you mean we win? And Hala's like, I'm not a part of this mess. Like, please leave me out of this. Let's see. This is a long conversation.
Susan kind of like does... Yeah, Susan does like a kind of term where she's like, oh, wait, I'm like the head cryptographer and he's like a young gunner. I should use as a teaching opportunity to explain to our young protege here that the NSA really is good. It's good that we read all your emails. I should make him see that through reason. And it's my responsibility as a senior staff member here. And, you know, there's a frail gate separating democracy from anarchy. The NSA guards that gate. And then Hale nodded thoughtfully.
I skipped all of this.
Custodiat ipsos custodes, which is a very common phrase that Susan Fletcher has never heard. It's Latin, Hale said, from the satires of Juvenal. It means who will guard the guards. I think more commonly who will watch the watchmen or something like that, but whatever.
My only three notes for this chapter are really conflicted over here. He's hashtag woke bae, but a eugenicist. Note two is who watches the Watchmen, and note three is can we watch Watchmen?
But have you seen, so he even says, who will guard the guards? And she's like, I don't get it. Who will guard the guards? And then, if we're the guard society, then who will watch us and make sure that we're not dangerous?
That's what happens when a STEM person doesn't take any humanities courses.
It blows Susan's mind. She's so confused.
She's never questioned authority before, it looks like.
Anyways, chapter 32 is the best chapter in this entire book.
Is it?
It's pretty good.
Oh,
chapter 32 is the one where David Becker just like decides that his best course, like his whole plan to go and interrupt the fat German man mid coitus and get him to give him the gold ring was always like a dicey proposition in theory, and in practice it's so much worse.
He's so sloppy with it. What are you doing?
He just knocks on the door. Just yeah. He opens the door, and then he continues this thing where Dan Brown does the translations, but like hasn't figured out that only things actually being spoken should be in quotation marks. So David Becker says, Deutsche, ja? German, right? And then we learn he did continue in German, and yet we still get the dialogue written in this half and half way. So Becker continued in perfect German. May I speak to you a moment? The man looked uneasy. Was wollen Sie? What do you want? And I think the mistake that David Becker makes here is he's just been greeted with the formal Z greeting, right? So it's like in Spanish or French, the tu vu difference in German is Z and du.
Yeah.
And so the German starts off addressing David Becker as Z, which is formal and respectful. And then the first thing Becker says is, du hast einen Ring. You have a ring.
Geez.
And he informalizes it and starts bringing this disrespect here to a man he doesn't know. And
but then the German comes also with the informal you.
Yeah. Well, because he's just addressed with du. So, was tust du? He demanded. What are you doing? Nimm deinen Fuß weg! Because Becker puts his foot in the door like an aggressive salesman from 1940. And then David Becker stood a long moment in the well-furnished hallway. A replica of a Salvador Dali hung nearby. Fitting, Becker groaned. So, out loud. He's just fitting out
they
loud.
They all talk out loud all the time. Later, I'm sorry. Susan is talking to herself a lot. Like, a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like...
With Greg Hale still in the room.
Does Dan Brown talk to himself all the time? What's going on?
He must. So, yeah. Becker gets locked out of the room. Then he decides, fuck this. I'm going to go back and try this again. Second time's a charm. And now David says that he's with the police, and he barges into the room after flashing his squash club ID
as
his police badge. Starts like interrogating him. Do you have a prostitute in the room? This is illegal here in Spain. But then Rocio comes. She talks for so long.
I know, they talk for a long time. I'm gonna do the rest of this chapter in like an ASMR.
Okay. That'll be fun for everybody.
Okay. So they're discussing. He's posing as an agent of this. A Spanish guardia here in Seville. And he is saying, like, you have a prostitute and I'll take you to the police office right now. But if you don't want that
to happen.
Like
it. I don't like it.
Okay, I'm done. No, I hate ASMR too. It freaks me out so bad.
This is my British accent of this. I don't like it.
Ooh. So he's like, okay, but if you don't want to be taken to jail for soliciting prostitution, then you have to tell me about the murder you saw in the park and where is the ring?
Murder? More murder? So David's like, he's either figured out or is just guessing that it's a murder, I guess. I don't know. Finally,
well, doesn't he know that it's not really a heart attack, or he's not up to,
I don't think
he's not up on that.
I mean, I think he's got suspicions, but like, as far as we know, even like Susan and Commander Strathmore think it was actually a heart attack. I mean, we also know there's this assassin running around now, and so it seems like maybe he might have been involved somehow, but nobody else knows that.
The German man goes from white to purple, which are the two colors of German people.
Correct.
And the beautiful Rocío Eva Granada stands in the doorway, using her real name at work.
Yeah.
This one has wide hips because she's like a sex pot. If you're like a woman to take home to mom, then you're like slender, but you have perfect breasts. But she has like wide hips and tanned cleavage, question mark. Wait, I'm sorry.
It's a lot to handle.
Okay, I want to talk about it. So she's wearing a robe. You know how a robe works. The tie is over her hips. That's not how you fasten a robe.
The tie was drawn snugly over her wide hips, and the neck fell loosely open to reveal her tanned cleavage.
Does it mean?
Yeah, that's not like any robe I've ever seen.
Does it mean
or worn.
Above her hips, around her waist? Accentuating her
wide hips. I think that's probably what he's thinking about over her wide hips is over in terms of like verticality and not like externality.
I don't like it.
It's bad. Yeah. So now Becker is dealing with Rocío in Spanish mostly because, and this blocks the German guy out of the conversation because he doesn't speak Spanish.
Yeah. And, she's like, I'm with the Guardia Civil. And she's like, no, you're not, because I have fucked everyone in the Guardia Civil.
Jesus.
She's like, I'm going to call the police, and they're going to arrest you for impersonating a police officer. So you need to tell me who you are. And he's like, okay, no, I work for the U.S. government. I need the ring. I will pay you this amount of money for it. I don't know. Do you know how much money that is? 750,000 pesetas?
I do, because he says it's half of what he has on him, $5,000. Oh. If you look at the next sentence.
I was heavy skimming, heavy skimming. It was like 1:30 a.m. and I was like, I don't want to do this.
It's so good, though. So he offers that, and then she's like, that's a lot of money. And she's like, well, you know, I can't sell it to you for that. And then he's gonna be like, $1 million? That's all I have.
Wait, so he has
750,000? Which isn't true.
And that's half of what he has.
But then $1 million is all he has.
Hold on. Yeah. That doesn't...
He's not a math professor.
Obviously. It's why he and Susan, it's not a sexy name, get along so well because they complete one another. So she doesn't have the ring. She sold it, which, spoiler alert, she hasn't sold it.
No.
She just gave it away.
And
we're back to Tokugen Numataka.
Mm-hmm. And he's mad that North Dakota is not calling him in a timely manner.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Back to 32 just for a moment. So the German guy came to Spain by himself?
I guess. I don't know if he's like just a sex tourist or if he was like there on a work trip, then also decided hire an escort for the weekend.
I hadn't considered the possibility of a work trip. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
It looks like she's usually at that hotel, though, and if he was on a work trip, he would have his own hotel. Anyway, not important. 33?
Numataka is mad that North Dakota is not calling him back, and he's, like, worried it might be a hoax from some kind of business enemy.
He's flying down the hall, I assume, with Naruto arms behind him.
One second. I need to go to the bookshelf for a second.
Okay, bye.
Okay. So, Numataka went directly to the company's main switchboard. All calls were handled by a single operator on a Karenko 2000 12-line switchboard terminal.
What is happening? Why?
The Vatican switchboard is located in the Uffizio di Comunicazione behind the Vatican post office. It is a relatively small room containing an 8-line Karenko 141 switchboard. One of these is wrong because one's an 8-line Karenko and one is a 12-line Karenko 2000. I don't think those are two different companies,
well, we have
right?
To look them
it's got to be.
Okay. I'm sorry. What was the first one? Carel, can you spell it? Or I guess it's here.
Yeah, so one has an N, one has an L.
Wait, I don't think either one's real. There's a Cortelco.
Wow. Wow.
which is not either one of these things.
Cortel.
There is no Korenko or Korelko. Dan Brown has made up two fake switchboard company names that are
so he could tell
variations
us about them?
On real.
Why? You don't have to tell us anything about your switchboards. What's happening here? Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm going to look at the Wikipedia. Maybe their name has changed over the years. I'm going to look at their Wikipedia. Hold on.
No way.
Now it's called the Kellogg Switchboard and Supply Company. I don't care enough about this to read this Wikipedia page.
Fair enough. Anyways, the upshot of it is he's going to get the operator at his company to call the phone company and tell him where that call from North Dakota came from to make sure it's not like another rival company trying to make him look stupid.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay.
Woo! And then we're back with Susan Fletcher. She's kind of pondering over that quis custodiat ipsis custodis line.
I don't have any notes for this.
I don't think I do either.
She's like, her tracer's taking forever, and then she realizes that her she does some investigating and finds that her tracer has been aborted, and she's like, why?
So yeah, basically at the end of the day, Susan looks up in the list of error codes and finds out that her tracer was aborted manually.
Yeah, there's a lot
she didn't do, so that's weird.
There's a lot in between where she's like, well, Strathmore said it did bring back information. It was just unintelligible information. So it must be that it does work. Something must have happened in the execution. Then she goes and gets her sysop manual and goes through the list of error codes and finds that it was a manual abort, which I don't understand why it can say error code 22 and then not say 22 manual abort.
Well, you're not a computer scientist like these
I'm
people.
I'm really not. I have to go look something up in a dictionary. Kind of. This is the NSA. Okay.
And now we're back with David and Rocio, where we learn that she really didn't sell that ring. She just gave it to a girl because I've got Gitana blood in me. Gypsy blood. We Gitanas, in addition to having red hair, are very superstitious. A ring offered by a dying man is not a good sign.
Nothing about Gitana people having red hair, so don't know what that's about. Okay. I don't know where he heard that, but
yeah, the moral of the story is Rocio gave the ring away to a maybe punk British girl who had red and white and blue dyed hair and was wearing a British flag t-shirt. Is that right?
Yeah. You know how punks are a big fan of the flag of whatever country they're from?
Famously. Especially British ones.
She's like, it's just your average punk. And Becker's like, what does that mean?
Becker was from a world of collegiate sweatshirts and conservative haircuts. Like, I've been to college campuses. I was on one for a while. And, like, not everyone at a college campus has a conservative haircut and, like, a clean-cut East Coast, you know, waspy youth look.
Becker is Dan Brown. I don't know what else you want me to say.
Yeah. Dan Brown thinks that this college is just a prep school.
Yeah. Dan Brown thinks college is prep school. I guess Amherst is prep school. I know someone who went to Amherst.
To UMass Amherst or to like Amherst College?
Amherst College. Amherst College. Okay. The small liberal arts one.
Okay.
I was like, I don't know about, first of all, I don't know about small schools, but also I don't know about schools in Massachusetts that aren't in Boston. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it seems suspicious. Their mascots are the mammoths. That's kind of cool. I like
that. It's cold enough out there for it to be the mammoth.
Alumni. Calvin Coolidge went to Amherst College. Silent Cal. Albert II, the Sovereign Prince of Monaco, went to Amherst College.
That's wild. That's actually wild.
This is producer Forrest coming in to say, tragically, not what the piercing's named after.
Okay, I for my mental health, need to move away from Amherst College.
Okay, that's fair.
So So she's like, she has the ring. She was wearing a lot of jewelry. I didn't want to hold on to it, so I gave it to her. He was like, is there anything else to help me find the punk rocker? And there, and then the giant man, his lower lip quivered, and then he said, fuck off and die.
Oh, that kicks ass. That's also a very good line.
And he's like, excuse me? And he's like, yeah, fuck off and die. Patting his left palm against his fleshy right forearm. A crude approximation of the Italian gesture for fuck you.
We've been skipping a lot of descriptions of this man's corpulence.
He isn't thick fleshed, though.
Nah, he's... I don't know what his deal is.
He's just fleshed. He's like, what the fuck? And she's like, don't worry, I'll, what she means to say is I'll fuck him until he's not angry about this anymore. Then he says, no problem at the end. Like, okay, so David Becker's like, okay, sorry for bothering you. Thanks for all the information. And the German guy is like, no problem. And then Becker is like, what do you mean no problem? Like, whatever happened to fuck off and die? So... is fuck off and die going to be some kind of another Carmen Sandiego clue? Because...
oh, maybe, but I doubt it. I think he's just careening back and forth from being locked in on or something. I don't want to bring us back to this, except I'm going to. ScanGrade, a test-scanning robot from the MTV cartoon Clone High, graduated from Amherst.
There's so much going on there. Hold on. I need to... okay.
And also,
stop. Like, no, don't say anything. I need to work through it. MTV cartoon, like in the vein of like Beavis and Butthead.
Clone High is better. It's actually
High is the one with Cleopatra, and she's out there. And what's the pink haired girl? Is that Emily Dickinson?
Maybe. I haven't watched in a long time.
Yeah. Okay.
But like the most fucked up thing of all is
Mary Shelley.
In the list of Amherst College alumni in the fictional characters section, one of them didn't even go there. Leslie Note from Parks and Recreation chose to attend Indiana over Amherst her senior year of high school. So like she's not even
So does it say that in the thing that she chose one thing over the other?
Yeah. It says in the Wikipedia page that she chose Indiana over Amherst, so she didn't go to Amherst.
Yeah, but you know, they'll take any reference to Amherst they can get, so
I guess they got a lot of it. It's an extensive Wikipedia page. Anyways, now I promise I have X'd out of that page. I'm no longer looking at it.
Okay. So she's Susan is mystified at the manual abort, and she's like, she's speaking out loud the whole time. She goes, impossible. And then she's looking at the screen lock log. And her privacy code had been entered properly. And then she says out loud, then where, she demanded angrily, where did it get a manual abort? She scowled and closed the screen lock window. And then she
sees the timestamp so that she didn't notice when she was looking at the page. And she's like, wait, there's two login logouts of the screen
lock.
Well,
first out loud, she says, not possible, which earlier she said impossible. So growth. Let's see. Yeah. Someone logged in to her computer while she was out having that conversation for like a minute.
Yeah, and it can only have been Greg Hale.
So she resends the tracer, and then she says out loud, screw the honor code, she said. What the hell are you up to? These are all things she's saying out loud. And Hale is presumably in the room?
Yeah.
No, he's not. He's out.
No, he's out of the room at this point, because she goes over to his computer... and he doesn't have his screen lock on, which to me should raise a giant red flag, because what's about to happen is she's going to look through and find his email folder. And it turns out that Greg Hale is North Dakota, except it seems to me that if he were North Dakota, he would have more OPSEC than leaving his computer unlocked while someone he knows just sent a tracer looking for him is in the goddamn
room.
Well,
as Chartrukian said, these cryptographers don't understand security.
Yeah, I guess not.
So she finds these emails. Tancado's like, great progress. Digital Fortress is almost done. This thing will set the NSA back decades.
Yeah, that's how I talk in emails.
Yeah. And then Tancado? Yes. He's like, rotating clear text works. Mutation strings are the trick. What does that mean? We get something about mutation strings in a second, but I still don't understand what.
Well, you see, when you around the time you hit puberty,
if
you have the X gene, then it turns you into a mutant, and sometimes you acquire exciting powers from this, like the ability to walk through walls, or the ability to regenerate physically, or sometimes red lasers come out of your eyes, and it becomes a whole problem in your life.
Oh my god!
And that's a mutation string in your DNA.
Go off, Forrest. So I'm just going to say the things that she says out loud. So where we leave off? Screw the honor code. What the hell are you up to? Yeah. What's the next thing? She stops breathing for a second. It's not possible. That's the next thing she says.
But Tunkato...
And then she says, but Tunkato. And then, damn. Then she's talking to a person.
Yeah, so damn happens because Hale's coming back into the office and she can see through the, like, window or whatever. And so she starts trying to cover her tracks and she runs to the pantry. But she's forgotten to dim his terminal back. So it just is up there brightly and he'll surely notice. Oh, this is terrible.
Everyone's bad at being a spy. Becker is an awful spy. Susan's an awful spy. Hale is either good or bad at being a spy. We don't know yet.
But Becker is about to be a bad drunk spy.
For fuck's sake. Okay, 37.
Becker goes to the hotel bar where a dwarf-like bartender lay a napkin in front of him.
Que bebe usted? I learned that on Duolingo.
Nice.
What are you drinking? He's asking if there are any clubs for punk rockers. And the bartender's like, I don't know, man.
How about a drink? He's really giving the hard sell on this drink.
I mean, it's his job. And he's like, can I just get some cranberry juice? Because he loves the bartender juice. He loves juice.
Scandalized. Solo? Cranberry juice was a popular drink in Spain, but drinking it alone was unheard of. Becker said, solo.
This must have happened to Dan Brown. He must have gone to a bar and tried to get cranberry juice. And they looked at him like, what the fuck? Like,
the bartender's like really trying to sell him this splash of vodka in there. He's finally like, what if it's free? Grab it on the house? Take the vodka, goddammit. And then he finally is like, I guess so. And then Becker takes a sip of his drink and gags. That's a splash. And I want this bartender in my life.
Oh, me too. Yeah, if I just go up and I'm like, can I just get a water? And he's like, what about a water like, with vodka? For free.
That rules. I'm glad that chapter happened. But yeah, basically the bartender doesn't know where there's a punk club.
Yeah, what is the point of this? Of this chapter? Nothing?
just to remind us how much Becker loves juice.
And what drunkards
the people of Spain are.
Oh my god.
Chapter 38.
I would give my leg to go to Seville with Dan Brown when he was in college.
Can you imagine how fun he must have been?
Oh my god. I don't want to be like his friend. I want to be part of the group that's with him so we can all talk shit about him.
The bartender puts in like a milliliter of vodka and he takes a sip. He's like, oh, spits it out. This is a splash? This is vile. Are you trying to poison me, sir?
Dan keeps trying to talk to me in Latin. I don't know what's going on with
him. Excuse me. Is there salt on this food?
Right.
Is it seasoned with spices of some variety? This is tearing up my palate.
This is very exotic. He keeps trying to talk about my perfect Iberian skin. I'm not Iberian. What was he? He's so obsessed with skin. Didn't he say, he said something about Vittoria's skin that was very upsetting too. Like,
yeah, I mean,
it was like supple and smooth and almond scented or something. Mediterranean skin. Yeah.
It never fully goes away, but this book is like so obsessed with like weird racial and ethnic divides in Europe, and like I'm blaming that for my last episode's Armenian terror.
I mean,
this book is just turning me into like a
the phrenologist. Like I know Dan Brown. I mean, he grew up in Exeter, Massachusetts, and then he went to school there and taught there, and he went to Amherst. Like, I'm sure this is the first time he's ever seen like a brown person who wasn't like an extraordinary exception, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just blowing his fucking mind.
Dan Brown is 100% walking around with a pair of calipers in his jacket pocket.
Measuring Gitana skulls.
Yeah. Chapter 38. Now Susan's going to have to find a way to not let Hale notice his monitor that is up. And luckily, here comes Phil Chartrukian in the nick of time, banging his sweaty fists against the glass. And
hell
so
yeah.
They both run out in the hallway to go see what's up with Phil.
That's basically
and
it.
And Susan realizes that she's got to go talk to Strathmore and tell him that Hale is North Dakota.
She does dim the monitor. She does do that.
She does.
Hale goes and he's like, "Hey, Susan, you look awful. Go get some water." And then she doesn't, but she does dim the monitor.
Then it's on to chapter 39. Not my favorite.
My notes are, I think it just says, "Oh my God," in all caps.
Yeah, this is the first time we've ever like gotten a full on sex scene from Dan Brown, and not good. It's no good. Don't like it.
I'm going to take a second to talk about the sex scene in Jack Ryan for a second. First
Which
of all,
one? There's a couple.
The one between Suleiman and his wife, it's the first time I've seen a sex scene involving a Muslim couple, so that was really interesting. And then the one with Jack Ryan and the round-faced girl.
that's the right description.
I was talking to David about my David, not David Becker, about how he's just playing Jim. He's like manipulating people with his charm and outshining his boss and bothering women at work to flirt with them. It's the same character. But yeah, they had a sex scene, and so much of it, we see his back and his shoulders a lot, and I understand why. They're magnificent. But
you gotta see a little bit of butt later
on. Yeah. No, I saw his butt in the shower and I was like, hell fucking yeah, that's what I'm here for. But there was no butt in the sex scene, and that was really upsetting because there was a lot of butt in the other sex scene. And
no, that one was all like side stuff.
Yeah, that was side stuff and like close ups of him kissing, which I don't want to see. Oh, yeah, there was also that sex scene with the weird, like, cuckold couple.
I forgot about that one. I think I've driven that one.
It was so surreal and bizarre.
Yeah, that was.
Why was
something.
That in the show? It's like a Dan Brown thing, like edge for edge's sake.
Oh, well, that whole plot line that's part of like that weird the drone pilot.
Yeah.
What? Why is that in there? It seems like it's like them trying to add some kind of nuance to their take, but they don't have any nuance in their take on anything. It's very weird.
I mean, part of it was to save the life of Suleiman's wife.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And that sequence ends with her going, "God will protect us."
Yeah.
God was the guy with the drone pilot.
America, U.S. drone operators are God.
I'm screaming.
I don't see any problem with this. Our monstrous death machines that just like are circling everywhere, every day, all the time.
Luckily, the episode ended after that line, so I didn't have to like pause it and go get a drink or anything. Okay, 39. She grabs an ice cube and rubs it across her nipples to make her nipples poke out so that he would feel wanted.
That's her gift.
That's her gift, to make men feel wanted. It's what kept them coming back. She looks beautiful. She's in a black negligee. Her nipples stood at attention beneath the black lacy fabric. Black lace isn't the best fabric for, like, showing relief, you know? Like, showing a nipple poking out, because it's a textured fabric, but, like, I feel like white satin would have done better. Not important. Okay, so...
That's what I always say.
His fat fingers grope at every inch of her body. She's...
You missed an important operative thing in the previous paragraph.
Oh. Go ahead.
Because I don't want to. Rocio forced a smile and approached the bed. She gazed down at the enormous German. She chuckled in relief, which would not make him feel wanted. The organ between his legs was tiny.
So what was she scared of? A monster cock? What's going on?
I don't know. I mean, like, she doesn't seem to want to have sex with him, which is fair. But, like, I don't understand. Like, I just assumed he was repellent, not because I don't think the size of his dick would matter that much.
Well, that's why she chuckled in relief. She's like, oh, thank goodness.
At least it won't... I don't
know. My cervix will go undamaged. Yeah. So she's, like, all on him and digging her fingernails into his...
She gasped and choked against his putty-like neck.
And then she was thinking about, like, wanting kids and the countless men she'd satisfied. And then he, like, collapses on top of her and she feels her, like, ribs cracking. And then it turns out he's been shot with a silencer. A very silent silencer.
Very silent silencer.
His head is right there. You didn't hear the gunshot? Like...
Yeah, and then she also gets shot.
Yeah, it's very upsetting. Fuck that.
It sucks.
Okay, 40. Yeah. It's almost over.
Chapter 40. Chartrukian is yelling. It's definitely a virus in there. And awesomely, he yells, "Fuck Strathmore!" And then, who's right behind him / on the balcony above him? Mr. Chartrukian.
He's right and, behind me,
Strathmore's been watching. Yeah. And so Susan can't just blurt out that Greg hails North Dakota, and Strathmore is fixated on being mad at Chartrukian for questioning him. And so everyone's kind of yelling at each other, and there's mutation strings, and that's how the file got in there, because, you know, the gauntlet tripped because of the mutation strings, and then Strathmore bypassed the gauntlet, which is the antivirus thing that keeps them from putting viruses in Transalter.
He manually bypassed it, yeah.
Yeah, and Chartrukian's pissed about it, and he's convinced that Strathmore's put a virus into Transalter.
The phone rings, and Susan hopes it's David, and it's obviously not David. Yeah. And let's see.
Strathmore kicks Chartrukian out of crypto, and Hale is suspiciously unfazed by the entire conversation. Mm-hmm.
And that's it. They go back to node 3. That's the end. Not a very exciting ending to the section, but...
No, but there's this ominous air going back in there because, you know, we don't know what kind of dangerous criminal Greg Hale is, aside from a murderer.
That's yeah, definitely a murderer, definitely a eugenicist, definitely has a hot bod, which makes him just about criminal. So, yeah. And that's the section.
Yeah, so how do you feel about the overall Dan Brownness of the section?
Let me think about it. It was pretty Dan Brown in that I feel like the Dan Brown has a tendency to humanize people right before they die in a very sloppy way. Yes. And we got a lot of that this time with the travel writer and... well, we didn't get that with the fat man because fat people aren't human, but we did get it with Rocio.
Mm-hmm. What I kind of like about this section is it really feels like you're watching the kind of formative steps he takes and formulizes in later books.
Yeah.
And also the paths he doesn't walk back down. So, like, he never does sex scenes like that again. Thank God. But, like, you know, the kind of dumb misdirect mysteries that David's going through to get this ring, and just like this endless goose chase of things he has to solve, and like, you know, the meaningless riddle of the name Dewdrop, that seems like, you know, ground zero for Dan Brown figuring out his writing voice.
Yeah, I think it's hard to say that it's Dan Brown, because I think I kind of measure Dan Brown against the Da Vinci Code. But as far as like proto Dan Brownness, I would give it an A+. As far as Dan Brownness, I would maybe give it like a B or a B-.
That seems right to me.
Yeah.
And what about your level of enjoyment of this section?
Not high.
No.
This was one of those sections where I spent more time being angry than reading. You know, there's just a lot of racial stuff, a lot of homophobic things, and weird stuff about sex workers, and more stuff about Susan's fucking legs, and...
Yeah, it really seemed like at the end of last time, the book was about to like really start getting going and being interesting and good, and it didn't do that. It didn't do that.
It got slow and lazy and dialogue heavy. And so I think it's the same feeling I had last time where I want to keep reading it, but I think last time it was because I had a high expectation for the next. Last time I was like, oh, I want to see what happens next. And this time I'm like, I want to see if it gets better at any point.
Yeah.
Which you've said that it does, or you've said that it's interesting to read. But...
I think it does.
Yeah.
I'm now beginning to doubt the assessment of, you know, eighth grade Forest, but we'll see.
Fair. So for enjoyment, I don't know. I have to give it like a D, and that's being generous.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement there too. Do you have malware for this section? Who's your malware?
Can't we just stick with Angel and Demon?
Who's your demon for this section?
I had a few in rotation. Well, we didn't get enough Strathmore for it to really be Strathmore in this section.
No,
I guess
he's never really in there.
Yeah, he's not in. I guess it's Susan for just being like a fucking bootlicker for most of it.
I think mine is David. David's just trying so hard to be a cop, and like
he really is. But that. Dan Brown loves cops.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
disgusting.
They're an awful couple, and they deserve each other. Fuck off forever.
Yeah. Who's your angel?
My angel for this one, I guess it's the travel writer.
Okay.
Because he stood up for sex workers.
Mine is the hotel bartender with a bullet.
Well, what's your reasoning?
He's the best kind of bartender there is, which is the kind of bartender who enables you and also gives you a discount for more booze and also gives generous pours. Those are like the holy trinity of traits for a bartender.
I thought the travel writer was, you know, he knew what kind of man he was, and he was here to defend his honor, and he wasn't going to put up with any cop shit, and he wasn't going to put up with any, like, you know, like anti-sex work, like sex negativity from David Becker, which somebody needs to set that man straight, you know? And it's too bad that he's gone so soon, but I really respected him.
I liked everything about him, except he had a real let me talk to your manager vibe about him. And I'm not super down for that.
That's true. He did have like a little like, I'm in this brown hellhole. The beaches were rocky, but I think that doesn't extend only to, I guess, what Dan Brown considers developing countries. I think like he could be in any town in Canada and be equally as let me talk to your manager, you know?
Yeah, I know. But I mean, like there's no good let me talk to your manager people. I think.
So we had angels, demons, Dan Brownness,
demons,
enjoyment.
Is
that
everything? I think that's everything. Please follow us on social media.
Yeah. Before you follow us on social media, go right now into iTunes or wherever you're listening to this and leave a review. Because it, again, it really does help us reach new people. We've had a lot of new engagement recently, and that's very exciting. And that's thanks to you, and also thanks to my tags on SoundCloud.
Nice.
And yeah, so go ahead and leave us a review. Because again, like, it helps people reach us, and also it's nice to hear what people have to say about us. I appreciate it. Everyone's been, Forrest and I started this like dinky project, I don't know, a few months ago, and we have the best fans in the world, and it's nice to know that like people look forward to hearing more from us just like shitting on Dan Brown all the time. So
Brownomaniacs?
Brownomaniacs? That's Browniacs? Browniacs? Because that's like,
ooh,
Brainiacs.
It's a Brainiac.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. It's Browniacs. You guys don't get to vote.
Brown Blasts?
Brown Blasts. That's worse. That sounds like some kind of like cyst.
I am aware of what it sounds like.
Oh, I thought it was some kind of cyst, but I guess you have a different idea. Okay, follow us on social media. You can follow us at Dan Brown Code Pod on Twitter, or find us on Facebook by Googling the Dan Brown Code. You can follow me at Lina Jamili, LinaJemili.
You can follow me on Twitter at Wishbone Ulysses. Well, you can't because my thing's private now. You can follow me on Mastodon at Wishbone Ulysses at bofa.lol.
I'm not on whatever that is.